Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome to the Progressive Britain podcast. This is the podcast with the unpopular opinion that progressive centre-left politics has a lot to offer the modern world. Theresa May is refusing to budge on her Brexit red lines, but is reportedly willing to amend the Good Friday Agreement. On the same weekend, a car bomb is set off in Derry. I'm Connor Pope, and I'll be discussing the latest lack of Brexit developments with Stephanie Lloyd and Alison McGovern. Alison will also be speaking to Birmingham Yardley MP Jess Phillips about the launch of People's Voice, a series of events aimed at prompting more conversation about Brexit outside of Westminster. Shadow Brexit Secretary Keir Starmer gave a speech at the Fabian Society New Year conference over the weekend. What did you guys make of the speech?
Well, obviously, like, I wasn't there because I was watching Liverpool at Anfield. Most crucially. I mean, I've got opinions. I wasn't there. But
do you have, like, bets with your friends to see how quickly you can mention Liverpool Football Club in these podcasts? Because that was, I've got it in front of me. That was 4 seconds. That was pretty good going.
No, it's more just like I was actually at Anfield, like, and obviously anticipating the game ahead, but also checking what was going on at Fabian conference. And there was a bit of me that was like, should I be there? And I was like, no.
What did people on the COP make of Keir Starmer's speech to Fabian conference this weekend?
They weren't that bothered. Let's be honest. It was a mad game of football. They weren't that interested.
Steph, do you have any opinions, not about the game at Anfield this weekend?
I have no opinions on the game at Anfield, other than it did very well for me in my fantasy football. But other than that, no, I wasn't there, but I was on the doorstep trying to get a good Labour councillor elected.
Where were you on the doorstep, Steph?
I was on the doorstep in my local CLP of Streatham. So we've got a council by-election. So yeah, I was helping a very good friend, Stephen, hopefully get elected and turn out more of the Labour vote. But anyway, yeah, so I thought it was a very good speech. I thought Keir is very good at doing these kind of interventions in some of those set pieces. We saw it at a conference. We obviously saw another unplanned, rapturous round of applause and standing ovation when he mentioned Remain being on the ballot paper.
It was literally like a take two of the conference standing ovation, wasn't it?
Yeah.
That basically he kind of reaffirmed his commitment to the people who'd been in that big compositing room at conference. Mm. And, you know, I think it's sort of fairly well known now that basically Keir had made that commitment to them that if they accepted some of the constraints around having a public vote, that Remain would be on the ballot paper. And I think that bond of trust with the party members and Keir is pretty strong, isn't it?
It is pretty strong. And I think, you know, he was talking through the situation as to where we were now and obviously where we were from conference. So obviously the ultimate aim was to try and get a general election. Obviously lost the vote of no confidence. That seems even less likely now. But then basically being very honest with the fact there are kind of two options left on the table, really. One is that Theresa May and the Conservatives accept what would be a kind of Labour deal in that sense. Mm. So along the six tests, customs union, single market access, which again also seems very unlikely. Theresa May seems to be doubling down in terms of her red lines because she's so good at reaching out to people. And so he basically was affirming, you know, if that isn't the situation, the only thing left on the table in terms of the wording that we have at conference is a people's vote. And that is something that the Labour Party would be supporting. And, you know, it's very clear. I mean, we've seen lots of kind of commentators more on the left of the party kind of trying to rally around Jeremy's position and really try and make this big juxta, you know, really big divide between where proclaiming where membership are on conference policies and Jeremy's position and saying that everybody pushing for a people's vote now is just trying to do it against Jeremy and this big anti-Jeremy thing, which is just ludicrous.
But it's just not true.
It's just
it?
A lie. It's just a total lie.
Because firstly, like, the Labour Party has been a pro-European party for a really, really, really long time now. So that kind of understanding about the importance of our international relationships is really, really embedded in all bits of the movement. Like, the kind of Lexiteer wing is like very, very small and very, very niche. Mm. So even if, like, you know, the newer members that had come in to support Jeremy, if there was any evidence that they by and large like didn't support Europe, we'd know it by now. But actually, if anything, the feeling of pro-Europeanism has got stronger since we've had lots of new members. Mm. I think a lot of people kind of joined after 2017 and feeling like Brexit needed to go in a different direction.
This is it. I remember Labour Party conference, everyone walking around with the tote bags that was like, love Corbyn, hate Brexit. It was like, you're trying to create some form of divide here that just doesn't exist within the membership. But I thought it was really good of Keir to do, you know, I thought it was, he was very clear and, you know, it's a very good to hear that level of clarity from him. And obviously he was on the Mar show as well on Sunday.
I think that's one of the things that he is really good at actually is putting clarity within the policy of constructive ambiguity that apparently Labour has on Brexit. Because I think one of the questions was about if there was a referendum, what would you do? Yeah. And he was just like, well, I would campaign for in and I would vote for in. Like, my view on that hasn't changed. I'd still think that's the right thing to do. I think that went down very well. And it's interesting because stuff like that doesn't go against Labour policy, but there is a big question mark over it that frankly
even
hasn't
though
been.
Jeremy Corbyn himself voted Remain and was quite clear about that. Like, I completely understand why people sort of think about Corbyn's political background in terms of the Benite group and where Tony Benn was. And like, someone who's, you know, Barbara Castle, who's a personal hero of mine, campaigned alongside Tony Benn for us to leave the common market. So that, I understand why people, you know, think about Corbyn as part of that trend, but actually he was quite clear about voting Remain. And yeah, sure, he didn't want to stand on a platform with David Cameron and George Osborne, but he also did campaign for Remain. Yet even still, there does seem to be a lot of questions. So actually, I think the more clarity we can get about the fact that Labour is a pro-European party, and if we do have another referendum on it, we will be campaigning for our European Union membership. I think the more that we can get clarity on that, then even, as you say, Connor, within the ambiguity of the overall policy, simply because we don't actually know what's going to happen and what the government are going to do, we're in a very uncertain situation. I think that will help people see that, like, in the end, we do take a view on whether or not we're better in or out of the European Union.
That's where we can do a shameless plug then for the Labour Say campaign that we've just launched.
That was not what was on my mind, Steph.
No. Well, if you also agree with that, you can obviously go to laboursay.eu and email your Labour MP if you have one. Or if you don't, you can email Jeremy as the leader of your party and try and make sure that if that situation does come around where we get a people's vote, that that's exactly what it is that we're campaigning for, is to remain in the EU.
Excellent.
What do we think of the kind of stuff that Theresa May talking about trying to secure amendments to the Irish backstop and talking about amending the Good Friday Agreement over the weekend?
Which she cannot do.
Well, I mean, it was interesting that the Sunday Times obviously did this as a big front page splash. And actually the Sunday Times it does an Ireland edition and the Irish edition had actually contacted the Irish government and went, what do you think of this? And they went, no, essentially. So
The Good Friday Agreement not only is like, it's not only like registered with the United Nations and all of that kind of like global buy-in to that, but also it was secured with a referendum and 71% of people in Northern Ireland voted in favour of it. So if, as other people think about the Brexit referendum, you think the referenda should somehow take precedence over other democratic events, which they seem to do, then they're sort of hoist by their own petard, because like, they're going to overturn the Good Friday Agreement, which itself was secured with a referendum.
And obviously you need support from both the nationalist community and the unionist community in Northern Ireland in order to try and amend the Good Friday Agreement, considering that Stormont hasn't had a government because of breakdowns in relations between politicians from both sides of those communities means that like, how
would you do it?
They might just all come together to try and sort out a Westminster mess for some reason.
But it's like, considering Theresa May had the biggest historic defeat of any prime minister ever, I'm like, can you please not go anywhere near the Good Friday Agreement? Like, you just stay away from it.
But why?
Stop trying to do anything difficult. You are deeply incompetent.
Equally, like, I mean, call me a kind of conspiracy theorist, but also, like,
oh God, where are we
going? I'm so excited about this.
These newspapers that put these stories on their front pages over the weekend, like, what's their agenda? Because buried in the, I think it was the Telegraph story, was some details about pro-European Tory ministers who would resign in the event of no deal. Now, they went for Good Friday Agreement might be altered in pursuit of Brexit, rather than...
I enjoy your headline voice.
Rather than the little detail. Oh, and some Tory ministers... Actually, some cabinet ministers too might resign in the event of no deal, which seems to me to be the much bigger story. But maybe I'm just uber cynical about newspapers.
I would genuinely listen to an audiobook of you just like reading out of newspapers after that. That was fantastic.
Why do they not get me on that, what the papers say?
Yeah, that'd be great. If we're, you know, being conspiracy theorists, why don't we try and be mind readers as well? Because Yvette Cooper says that she thinks Theresa May actually wants Parliament to block no deal, and that she's just kind of hoping that Parliament will do the hard work on that and she doesn't have to. Do you think there's an element of truth in that?
The problem is with any of this is that no one wants to make an actual decision and have the consequences of it. So they're like, I would like to run a country. I, however, want no accountability or like actual blowback on any of the decisions I might make.
Hello, David Cameron.
But literally, I'm like, can you all just go away, please? It's like, you know, the idea that she sat there being like, well, I'm not going to make this decision, but if other people want to make it for me, it's like chess.
But that, I mean, Steph, that is the logic of where we are. So we've known that the Prime Minister was going to lose this vote for 2 months minimum, you know, maybe even more, depending on what their whips did or didn't know. So at that point in, you know, end of October, start of November, if you're a Prime Minister who's actually going to lead the country, it's incumbent upon you to take a decision and come forward with a plan. Whereas we're getting to the end of January now. It's only this week that the Prime Minister will actually come forward with any sort of plan B. And what that plan B seems to be is, I will consult Parliament and see what they want. I mean, lead, like, come up with a way forward. But that seems to be, you know, not what the Prime Minister wants to do.
So the next vote will be next Tuesday, won't it?
Yes. I mean, there may be other ways in which people introduce things before then, but I would be expecting the next important vote to be next Tuesday.
So, yeah. But what happens before then? What does Parliament do this week?
Shout at each other a lot.
Okay, like last time?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
I'm not going to watch that.
The entire debate on the no confidence vote the other week was just incredible. It was like hours and hours of this stuff, just people saying what we already knew they thought. It's like, no one's even trying to convince anyone else here. They're just going to stand up and say, I think this, by the way.
Yeah, because then they can clip it and put it on their Twitter and everyone's like, well done.
Yeah, it's the least edifying spectacle. I mean, don't get me wrong. I think people are quite right to make impassioned speeches about, like, you know, especially...
Yeah, we're just being cynical today.
We are in a very cynical mood. There are reasons to be passionate about whether or not the Tories should be the government. Obviously, they should not be the government and we're all very passionate about it. But it was so predictable what was going to happen.
But anyway, so more of that for about a week and then a vote.
Yeah.
Cool. I think we should probably leave it there because you've got Jess Phillips to talk to next.
I know, and Jess and I have all the words to say. we have always all the chat.
Cool. Well, do stick around for that right now.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
So hello, it's Alison McGovern. I'm the chair of Progress and I'm here with my very good friend and colleague, Jess Phillips.
Hello.
Hello, Jess. Now, I have got you into my office here to talk about Brexit because we never talk about it.
I know. It's one of those great mysteries, isn't it? Why people don't talk about it more. Never has so little been done by so many people in such a long
so much
time.
Shit.
Yeah. I mean, it is just phenomenal. My son asked me last week, what happened at work? Like, he'd obviously heard something exciting might happen. And I was like, literally nothing happened.
Yes.
Nothing happened.
Yeah. What do your kids think of Brexit?
Well, they don't like it, but I can't tell you why they don't like it. I mean, right. Grooming mainly. But they definitely don't like it. But my kids go to school with loads of kids who are from, came over during the sort of European migrancy. So I think they take it as a personal affront to like right. Charlie and their class sort of thing.
Yeah. So how dare you be against my mates?
Also, they both, because my brother lives in France and my nephews are French, they have a sort of worldview where they were like, we want to go and be able to live somewhere else and travel the world and work wherever we want. So I think they're slightly affronted on that.
Yeah, my daughter is convinced that Brexit is about stopping us going on holiday. She's absolutely convinced.
The roaming charges. My son is very, very worried about roaming charges. He might actually have to talk to me on holiday.
Oh, my word. No. Oh, my days, we should say, for the young people. Anyway, given that quite a lot of young people, actually, it's interesting because your constituency voted Leave, didn't it?
They did. 60-40.
Okay.
So quite a lot.
So that is quite a lot.
Yeah.
So do the young people in Birmingham Yardley sort of dislike Brexit as much as the young people everywhere, or do you think it's different?
I think it is different, but people don't, I mean, some of them get in touch with me and are like really worried as young people. But people really rarely talk to me about Brexit at home. That my constituents rarely bring it up. I have to bring it up with them to incite some sort of response. And usually you can get like a sort of quite a polarised response if you bring it up. But, you know, the same as if you'd talked about a football team, or if you don't bring it up, it's not top of people's agenda where I live, Brexit. Not at all. And so there is no big sort of marches through my constituency or anything. There's none of that going on.
Like either way, like in
fact. Either way.
Yeah.
I mean, if like all MPs will have had loads of emails from various campaign groups.
But I mean, the barrier to that sort of activity is quite low. Like all you have to do is like click through the
thing. Exactly. I've started inviting people who've said that they want the new slogan for a no deal Brexit, because no deal doesn't sound good. It's a bit like deal or no deal.
Yeah.
Is the clean global, isn't it? That's what they keep saying, clean global. I've had a couple of people. And so instead of giving them my response, I just reply back and say, why don't you come in and chat with me about what a clean global Brexit looks like? And mostly people don't realise that they've even signed the thing. They certainly don't want to come in and chat about it.
They're busy. They've got
loads of other things to do. Exactly. Lidl has some amazing new central aisle bargains. The scuba masks to be had for scuba diving you will never do.
Can't be going to see your MP to talk about a clean Brexit and what that means.
I've had quite a few recently as well saying, well, if you want a people's vote, what would the question be? And I said, why don't you come in and we could chat about it?
What do you think it should be?
People never want to come in and chat about it. They just want to sort of air their opinion. But if I were to look at the polling of those people who got in touch with me, it's vastly, vastly more people who either want another referendum or they want to remain.
So let's get onto this. I wanted to ask you about something that you said recently, which I violently agreed with. It is actually true. We ought to be like disagreeing here because that would make more entertaining podcasts.
Sorry, that's going to happen.
I don't think it is going to happen, but we're just going to violently agree instead. So the whole People's Vote campaign malarkey, you said it was, what, full of posh white men?
Well, yeah, I said it's a bit posh and it's a bit London.
Right.
So those are my two complaints about it.
But and by actually, London, we don't mean proper South London, do we?
No. We're not down Brixton Market talking about it. I mean it has slightly too many of the hallmarks of campaigns I've been part of in the past, in that it's many of the same people. Yeah. But it just feels sometimes a little bit certain of itself.
Yeah.
And what I really violently dislike about the clean global Brexit is how violently certain people are of their position. And I think that that's where we went wrong last time. And so we've got to think about how we talk about it going forward. Otherwise, we're just going to end up in exactly the same position. And I think that sometimes I think that the People's Vote campaign, like the massive thing they did here, the big march in London.
Yeah. 700,000
people, yeah. The first time I ever heard about it, I was at Cheltenham Literary Festival and a woman gave me a leaflet for it to ask me if I wanted to get a coach from Cheltenham. I said, well, I don't live in Cheltenham. I'm just here for the day. And I'm sure there were lots of people who went from Birmingham, but it didn't even reach me that it was happening. And I'm a Westminster politician. And I just then thought, I think we might just be talking to a select group of people. And that worried me then. Also, I think that if marching and street stalls changed the world and won elections, the SWP would be in power, wouldn't they?
Yeah, they would, wouldn't they? Yeah, thank goodness for that, eh?
Thank goodness it doesn't work.
Yeah, exactly. So, okay, so let me, like, I think, so basically our criticism is they're too certain of themselves.
They're a bit certain, and that comes from, I think, a little bit boyish. It's a bit boyish. It can be a bit boyish. And they have really tried, and I'm part of this campaign now, They have really tried recently to be talking about women as well. It can come across as a bystander as a little bit aggressive at times, and maybe that's because I'm looking at it on Twitter, and Twitter is a naturally aggressive platform.
Yeah, although speaking of naturally aggressive, the last person to do this podcast was Alastair Campbell.
I mean, when I said it's sometimes coming across as aggressive on Twitter, I think that's what I was talking about.
So I said to him, like, look, you know, a lot of our constituents expect us to be able to hold an argument, right? They expect us to be able to, if they do want to have a robust debate, you know, especially if you've knocked on their door, right? If you knock on someone's door and say hello, you know, just looking around to say hello. Is there any
balls issues in their court.
Yeah, like they can say what they like, right? Because you've interrupted their tea.
Yeah.
So they do expect us to be able to have a debate. But I'm very conscious that if politics becomes like a shouting match, which it does sometimes, that has a knock-on effect on people who aren't us.
Yeah.
And a lot of my constituents, not only do they not raise it because, you know, they've got other things on.
Yeah.
You know, they're
normal,
busy, but also they don't raise it because they don't like it.
Yeah, they don't want to get into a argy-bargy.
Exactly.
Lots of people said that to me. I don't know how to talk to my family about it because I don't want to cause a row, but I disagree with... I mean, I had some friends at Christmas who genuinely didn't go and see some of their family members. And when I say family members, I'm not talking like great aunties. I'm talking mums and dads.
Oh, my God.
Because they... you know, or they limited it so that the conversation couldn't come up, or made rules about how they weren't allowed to talk about it.
Wow.
Because people, that you're right, your average voter, your average citizen doesn't want to enter into a massive slanging match. They want to have conversations, and they want to be able to say that they don't know.
Yeah.
And actually, if you're a bit certain and all one way about something, people are much less likely to be able to process their own views on it because they won't be able to. It's just like imposter syndrome, isn't it? It's what women have been putting up with forever, is that we didn't say, oh, hang on a minute, I don't actually know what you're talking about, because that would have meant everybody thought, oh, stupid woman in the meeting. Yeah. But actually, nobody in the meeting knew what was being talked about. Exactly. Nobody wants to speak up and say. And actually, it just pushes, it marginalises people a little bit. So, I mean, I did a thing with the People's Vote in Birmingham on Saturday, and it was called
The People's Voice.
Thanks, Alison.
I know, but I saw it on your Insta before. And Instagram has some uses.
And it was much more about listening to each other. And there were some Leave voters and some quite strident, clean global Brexit people in the room. And they got a fair hearing, and yeah, we had a bit of a conversation, and some of it was really moving what some people were saying. And there were some people who wanted a Norway plus. It was a bit like being here in the tea room.
Yeah.
And that was much, much better. The sort of the allowance of doubt and the allowance of just doesn't, you know, there's no wrong answer. You know, we're not all going to shout you down if you say something that we don't agree with. And that was much, much better. And I hope, and I will gladly work with the People's Vote to do much more of that sort of stuff.
Yeah, that's good. Okay, final question. The other big criticism, I suppose, that we have to face up to is the fact that we did lose last time. So, you know, Progress is saying that Labour should lead the campaign, if we do get a future referendum, that we should lead the campaign for our EU membership. And it feels a little bit like coming off the back of George Osborne's sort of, you know, project fear. And Cameron and Osborne really were convinced that all they had to do was say to people like, you will be poor, you will lose your jobs, seeming to have forgotten the fact that they had already made people quite poor to begin with.
Jobs,
yeah, exactly. They'd already like sacked like hundreds of thousands of public servants. Yeah. And, you know, so what does a positive campaign look like in your view, Jess Phillips?
Well, the difference now is that we're not arguing for the status quo, which I think is easier. We are arguing for something different. We are arguing to change the way our country not is projected, but as it is today.
Because Brexit is what's happening.
Brexit is what is happening. So it's always easier. It's always easier, actually, to be the underdog, and it's always easier to fight a change.
Yeah.
Because it's much more inspiring to fight a change than it is to just be like, down with this sort of thing.
Careful now.
Yeah, careful now. Don't upset the apple cart. Exactly. It's much harder. And my husband, who is like an actual passionate European citizen, like passionately so.
And also like is the author of actually half your Twitter, is he not?
Well, I just repeat what he says, yeah, because he's really, really funny.
Yeah.
But very, in a very sly way. But he was like, I just can't vote with David Cameron. He was like genuinely like, this is nay good for me, Jess. I feel like I'm voting for David Cameron, and I can't be having that.
I think a lot of people were in that boat, weren't they?
Yeah, I think so. And I think that it wasn't along the political lines that people ordinarily understand trust, rightly or wrongly, for their own family's benefit. And so it was confusing on that ground. So for people like my husband, it was like, hang on a minute, I think we should stay in the European Union, but if David Cameron's saying it, I'm almost certainly going to impoverish my children, you know, lose their teachers, their jobs, nurses will be bankrupt. And so
that'll be one in the eye for David
so
Cameron.
So he was just like, what? Yeah. So I think that, but I think that there is a real positivity to be had, but I have to say, the Leave campaign won for all sorts of reasons, but one of the things that was better about their campaign, and it was better, there's no two ways about that, is that they didn't give a toss about the rules, and they didn't give a toss about common decency. And the whole Michelle Obama, when they go low, we go high, I think we should go low.
And there we have it. And I think that is the point at which we are probably just about run out of time. Although, Jess, you must actually listen back to the Alistair Campbell podcast that we last did, because regular listeners of this podcast and readers of London's Evening Standard will know that it starts off with an anecdote of Alistair and I having just walked in to do the podcast after having told Boris Johnson that he ruined our country.
I love to tackle Boris Johnson in the corridors. He literally cannot, his eyes to the floor. I mean, he's not a fighter at all, is he? He's not a brawler. No. He can't take any sort of confrontation. When he said all that stuff about Muslim women and he was just going to Birmingham, I bumped into him on the escalator. I was like, enjoy Birmingham, Boris.
Yeah, famously had to come to Liverpool once to apologise to the city, you know, because he kind of, I forget what he called us, we had mawkish sensibilities, that's what he said, which I think means you cry a lot. It's like, can't really help it. Anyway, so yes, standing up to people who need to be standing up, stood up to. That is in fact where we will leave it. Thank you, Jess, for being on the Progressive Britain podcast.
No worries.
Each week, we ask a political pub quiz question, which is then answered on Friday's show. May's withdrawal bill prompted the biggest government defeat in history. But prior to that, what was the biggest Tory rebellion in modern political history? Let us know if you think you've got the answer, which we'll reveal on Friday's extra episode. And thanks very much for listening.
You've been listening to the Progressive Britain podcast. The music was When in the West by Blue Dot Sessions, licensed under Creative Commons. And many thanks to the brilliant Caroline Crampton, who produced this podcast.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.